Welcome to episode 60 of the Practice of Nonprofit Leadership. I'm Tim Barnes.
And I'm Nathan Ruby.
Today, we're going to be covering how the current economic conditions might impact your year-end giving this year. While some of what we're talking about today is very specific to the fall of 2022, when we're recording this and all the things that are happening at this time, it will also include some general comments about how the economy impacts giving in general. So if you're listening to this in 2023 or 2024, we believe it's still relevant to you.
That's right, Tim. And the current economy here in the fall of 2022 can absolutely impact giving, but not always in the way you think it will. But before we get into today's topic, we've had a couple of questions lately on why we cover certain themes. And, you know, sometimes these themes are, we do a specific podcast episode on it. Sometimes we weave it into our comments, but we wanted to just take a couple of minutes and review three kind of key themes that we talk about a lot and just why it is that we talk about those themes.
Our first topic is focused on leadership, because we know how important leadership is as helping an organization be truly effective in accomplishing its mission. Now, we know there are thousands of books and hundreds of podcasts and resources, but and we're big proponents of reading and listening to podcasts. We also understand that sometimes it can be overwhelming, and where do you start, and how do I process everything? And to be honest, we feel that the current offering on leading small to medium-sized organizations, particularly as it relates to nonprofits, is underrepresented in books and podcasts. And that's part of the big reason why we started this podcast in the first place. The second topic that seems to pop up a lot that we talk about has to do with board. And we talk about boards and issues surrounding your board often, because leading and managing your board is not always intuitive. Helping manage and lead your board can be some of the greatest experiences and some of the most discouraging. Because in one sense, you work for the board. And that's really hard sometimes when you have 5 to 10 bosses. And so that's a dynamic that needs to be thought about. And at the same time as you work for them, you also are part of helping lead them and helping them go in the directions that they themselves set. So it's a challenging place to be, and it's a good topic for us to talk about.
So, and the third topic, Tim, is, and you all probably, when I say this, you'll say, yep, that's, you do talk a lot about that. And that is actually fundraising. And, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about fundraising because it is probably the most common question we get. A lot of executive directors are looking for help in this area. You know, executive directors, normally they have a, well, not normally, they always, Tim, have a specific skill set. You know, maybe they're, usually it's on the program side, but it could be on the accounting side. It could be, you know, in some other app, maybe on the marketing side. But seldom do executive directors have real deep skill and knowledge in fundraising. So that's why we talk about it. It is something that is relevant. It's something that's timely and something that a lot of people are asking for. And so that's why we cover it. So those are the three things that we cover. But Tim, you got something else to say.
And all I'll say is we really work hard to listen to you. And if there are topics that you would like addressed, specific things that you are wanting to know more about or dialogue, please reach out to us and we'll make it part of a podcast at some point. But we are trying to be responsive to those challenges that you yourselves are facing.
Yeah, that's a great point, Tim. Because, you know, being the executive director, especially of a smaller, medium-sized organization, you really are expected to know A to Z. The whole gamut of all there is to be and all there is to do for a nonprofit. And we just, no individual has that. And so no matter where your individual where your individual liabilities are or where you're not as strong, much. You're just like everybody else. So, and that's why we created this podcast. So we're glad you're here with us, and we're glad that you're part of this journey with us. For the next 20 minutes or so, we are going to be talking about the current economy and how it might impact fundraising over the next 2 months. Stay tuned to the end, because at the end, we're going to wrap it all up and give you three simple things that you could do between now and the end of the year to maybe mitigate any negative impact that the current economy might have. And for those of you who skipped to the end to hear the ending and are now back listening to us, welcome back. All right, here we go. The first piece is understanding economic news. Now, the attorneys wanted us to say right off the bat, we are not financial advisors, and this is not financial advice. Kind of like in last week's episode, Tim, we were not counselors, and we were, so I want to make that clear. Same way this week, we're not advisors, we're not financial, no financial advice here. That said, the market does not like uncertainty. So what is uncertainty? All right. Uncertainty is anything that causes doubt within the market. So political changes. So right now we got the midterm elections. This is early November when we're recording this. So midterm elections are coming up next week. Nobody knows, depending on which news station you listen to, you may have an idea or a guess of how that's going to come out, but we don't know that. The market doesn't like that. Another type of uncertainty is war. Right now, as we record this, the Russia-Ukraine war is still going on. Don't know how that's going to turn out. Don't know how long it's going to be. Don't know what, the world is in turmoil over that. Market doesn't like that. Another thing that the market doesn't like is interest rates. Later today, as we record this, the Fed actually met yesterday, and today they are going to be releasing their decision on interest rates. Now, the market has already priced in a 75 basis point increase. And if that happens, if it's announced today that it is a 75 point increase, then it's probably market's not going to react too much or shouldn't react too much. But if the Fed comes out with a 50 basis point or a 100 basis point change, the market will be extremely volatile. So what does this have to do with your donors? Well, good question. And here's what it means. Donors, whether they're individuals, foundations, corporate, your whole big pie of donors also don't like volatility. They don't like listening to their favorite news source and hearing, oh my gosh, the markets are going crazy, or oh my gosh, the market's going up or down, or these big whipsaw events within the market. They hear that and it causes an emotional response. And donors are susceptible to fear. What donors hear on the radio and watch on TV can absolutely impact giving. So market news, economic news can impact donors emotionally. The next thing on economic news, people and organizations actively trading in the market. And when I say organizations, I'm primarily talking about foundations here. If they are actively trading in the market, do not care if the market goes up or down, because they can make money both ways. So people that are actively investing in the market and organizations, foundations that are actively trading in the market, they can make money when the market's going up, and they can make money when the market's going down, as long as it's predictable. And if you're actively trading in the market, you can predict things like that. Here's an example. Every year at Christmas, my wife, her favorite two Christmas movies are It's a Wonderful Life and White Christmas. My wife loves these movies. And every year the first year we got married, we have sat down and watched those movies together. Now, personally, I detest It's a Wonderful Life. It is probably on my top three worst movies ever. White Christmas is a little better. I don't mind that. It's a little fun. It's a little lighter. I could do White Christmas, but It's a Wonderful Life is tough for me to get.
I'll just have to say there is a division of opinion on It's a Wonderful Life on this podcast, but go ahead, Nathan.
but we digress there.
Yeah.
So there's one scene though that always sticks out in my mind in It's a Wonderful Life. And for those of you that haven't seen it, it's a story about Black Friday, and the main character is George Bailey, that's Jimmy Stewart, and he is leading or is the leader of the building and loan. So he's a banker. So they loan money so people can build houses, and that's all I'm going to go into the plot. But it's Black Friday. And the market is crashing. There's runs on the banks, and it's just chaos financially in the U.S. And so the scene is that George Bailey is in the office, and all these like probably 50 people crowded into the entry area, and they all want their money back because they're afraid of what's happening. They're afraid that the banks are going to close, and they're afraid that they're not going to have any money. And what George is telling them is that, you know, I don't have that cash. It's all tied up in your homes because, you know, you deposit money and I, you know, and you get that money to build a home. And so he's explaining it. And this character comes in and says, Old Man Potter. Now, Old Man Potter's the richest guy in town, and he owns like all of the town. And this character comes in and says, Old Man Potter is offering 50 cents on the dollar. So if you pledge what you had in the bank, he will pay you $50 or 50 cents on the dollar on that. And the word or the line that George gives is, look, don't you get it? Potter's not selling, Potter's buying. So the whole point of the last 2 minutes here is, just because the market is going down or up and it's volatile and it's going all over the place, that does not mean that your specific donors are financially worse off, because in fact, some of your donors may actually be making tons of money when the market is actually going down, because that's how they position themselves. Now, again, not everybody is going to be that, but just because you're hearing negative financial news, negative economic news, don't assume, well, okay, I'm not even going to go talk to my top five donors this year because, you know, things are sounding kind of bad on the radio and it's kind of tough. And so I'm just not even going to do that this year. That is not the correct thing to do.
I think the pandemic is a good example of that. There were people who made tons of money during the pandemic when a lot of people were really struggling. So a bad situation doesn't always mean people who have resources to give, you know, they still may be able to give.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Is it true that donors overall give less during economically difficult times? Yes, that is true. Over the last 60 years, and this is from Giving USA, overall giving has increased 3% when you adjust for inflation. So the big macro trends are that giving has increased over the last 60 years. However, there are times where giving has definitely gone down. In 2008, for those of you that are of the age to remember 2008 and 2009, those were tough, tough economic years. The housing bubble burst, and it was tough during that time. In 2008, overall giving decreased 7.2%. And again, in 2009, it decreased 8%. So, you know, over 15% in 2 years. So negative economic time can negatively impact giving. There's no question about that. So why do donors then give less during economic uncertainty? Well, a couple of reasons. One, let's talk about individuals first. So individuals, and if they're still working, if your donors are predominantly, you know, 20 to 60 years old, which is a lot for smaller organizations, you have your typical donor base is still in their working years, producing years. Individuals are susceptible to their own economic reality. So if I'm afraid that I'm going to lose my job or that I could lose my job, you know, human nature kicks in, and maybe I don't give up on all of my giving, but maybe I give $100 instead of my typical $200 gift. or maybe I don't attend an event that I've always gone to in the past. Now, maybe I don't go to that event anymore because during COVID, I got out of the habit of going to it. That could be. But maybe things are not quite as stable in my job. And so I'm just bringing it in a little bit. And maybe I'm not going to give as much as I gave in the past, or maybe I don't give at all. Retired individuals. A lot of smaller organizations have a lot of retired individuals in their donor base. And they can definitely be impacted. And for people on a fixed income, one of their biggest impacts is actually inflation. Inflation right now, if you've had the radio on or the news on at all in the last 6 months, inflation has definitely become an issue here in the U.S. And actually globally, inflation has been an issue. And we're at about 8.3%, give or take, of inflation right now. And that is the highest it's been since the 1970s. And so for a lot of people, this is and some of your donors, they've never really experienced an inflationary time. So it's scary. It's it makes an impact. And if you're on a fixed income and now all of a sudden, gas is $4.80, $4.50 a gallon, and food is going up, and, everything is more expensive than it used to be. Well, again, that creates fear, that creates doubt. It creates a sense of, okay, maybe I should just be a little more careful this year. And so maybe I won't participate in that year end appeal like I normally do. And then for the wealthy, for wealthy individuals, and you always have to remember, wealthy is a relative term. One person's wealthy is another person's. How can they live on that? And, this was several years ago, but I was leading an organization and I had one of my board members. We were had just finished up a donor visit, and we were in the elevator going down. And I don't know how the conversation got to this, but we were talking about income levels. And this was back in the mid 2010s. And my board member said, "Yeah, I heard the other day there's this family and they were living on $100,000 a year. And I don't know how people can live on that." And I'm thinking, that's about like what my household income is. And it's so, I'm doing it. And anyway, so it's just people's wealth and what is wealthy and what is rich is relative. It's relative to their own position or their own situation. And so with wealthy households, what you need to understand is often wealthy households have multiple streams of income. They are not just relying on their income from their job or just one source of income. They oftentimes they have dividend income or they have other passive income that is really not really impacted by current economic situations. So they're less susceptible to the ebbs and flows of market volatility. So just because you have a donor who is giving at a certain level doesn't necessarily mean that the current economic situation is going to impact them the way that it might. Maybe it will, maybe it won't.
So Nathan, that's really good, focused on individuals. How does economic uncertainty impact foundations if we have a number of small organizations that get a lot of funding from foundations? How does that connect?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, in foundations, you have foundations that are endowed. So that would be typically your foundations, that private foundations that you're going to are, they've got, millions or hundreds of millions of dollars and they're endowed. Some foundations are still actively looking for funding and are actively funding it every year. So typically that'd be like a corporate foundation. And then, of course, you have government grants. And that would be a kind of a third category. And so it really depends how market situation is really going to depend how they're funded. And, if you're funded, if the foundation is an endowment funded organization and they've got several millions of dollars, and they give out of the interest from those funds, you're probably going to see a decrease in funding this year. It may be either instead of giving out 20 grants, they're only going to do 10, Or they'll still do the 20, but instead of giving out 100,000 per grant, they're only going to give out 50,000 per grant. If they are relying on investment income, because those foundations, they have parameters in place that, you know, they're only, if their intent is to keep the foundation going on forever, which most of them do, then, you know, their giving will go up and flow year over year based on market returns. So if you're going after funding for them, you're probably going to see a difference in grants for those. On the corporate foundation, same thing, you know, because they're going to depend on what their business income was. But again, it depends on the business. Not all business sectors are negatively impacted by this year's economy. So it really depends on what sector that business is in. So just don't assume, well, you know, we usually ask for $10,000 from this foundation, so we're going to ask for less this year. You know, I'd ask for more and just see where it goes. And then the other thing is the government grants. And if you're going after state grants, you know, they're really different and their funding mechanisms are very different. And so and they're less susceptible to year over year economic issues. They, for government, especially state contracts, that's more of a long term macro trend as opposed to short term economic trends.
I think what you're saying, if I hear you right, we're probably going to experience some fluctuations in our year end giving as we see some of the economic things that are going on. So the question I got to ask, and I'm sure everybody else is saying, so what? So what do I do? How do I respond to that?
That's an excellent question, Tim. This takes us to the end where we said we're going to give you some things to do. So here you go. If you're taking notes, here's the two things that you can do. First of all, is you can play offense. And this is really not an option. This is something that you're going to have to do. And playing offense means communicating with your donors. You have got to be out in the next 2 months. You've got to be out telling your story. What are the amazing things that your organization has done this year? How have you impacted lives? How have you changed lives? How have you saved lives? You've got to be out telling that story. Face-to-face is always the preference. That is always the first option. Now, you know, obviously, if you have a donor base of 400 donors, you can't get to every single one of them face-to-face. So you're going to have to kind of pick and choose which ones that you communicate with face-to-face. You know, Tim and I have national and international donors. And so, you know, it's just not feasible to be talking to every single donor face to face. But again, we're making those same choices of who are we going to be seeing? Who are we not? But you've also got Zoom calls and phone calls and texts and appeal letters and your social media apparatus. So you have all kinds of ways that you could be communicating with your donors, sharing the story, and asking them to financially support you this year. And I would say, you know, every year it's important that you do that. Every year that's an ongoing, that never ends, to be communicating with your donors, being in front of them, sharing the story. There's never a time where you say, oh, that's not important. That's always important. It is in times of where you've got economic uncertainty and volatility, it's even more important that you get out in front of your donors and let them know how important your work is and how important it is for them to support you. Which is the next point on playing offense, which is asking them to support you. You know, in no matter what type of way, whether it's face-to-face or Zoom or phone or text or appeal letters, you've got to ask for the gift. You have to ask them to support you and all these great things that you're doing. You can never leave it up to your donor to say, yeah, we're doing these great things. Hey, thanks. You know, thanks for visiting with me. Bye. It's, you know, we're doing all these great things. And this year, it's more important than ever, you know, that your gift of 500 or 1,000 or 2,000 or whatever it is, your gift is even more important this year. And, you know, so you've got to make that ask. So playing offense, communicate with your donors and asking them to support you. And secondly, you know, you can also play defense. And a couple of things that you could do on defense is taking a look at your 2023 budget For a lot of donors, the revenue that you fundraise in November and December of this year will, you know, a lot of that gets spent in first quarter, second quarter next year. So it does impact your budget for next year, obviously. So in there, I would say, you know, playing defense, take a look at your budget for next year. I think it's Ben Franklin, Tim, that said a dollar saved or a penny saved is a penny earned. I'm not sure that's exactly the quote, but it's in that theme. So in our case, a dollar saved is a dollar earned, or $5,000 saved is $5,000 earned. So point is here is check your budget, make sure it's tight, make sure that it's strong, that you're sending money to the places that you really need it to go. Double check your cash flow. We've done an episode a few weeks ago on cash flow and how to double check that. So just take a look at your budget and make sure that you've got it nice and tight. And then another thing on playing defense, and I'm gonna say this, and Tim, we probably need to do an episode on this, but this could also be, depending on what your 2022 total returns are, maybe it's time to look at some of your bottom performing programs. Nonprofits are not traditionally good at reducing programs or getting rid of programs altogether. Actually, in the 20 plus years I've been doing this, Tim, I have never seen an organization say we are really good at cutting programs, you know, because nonprofits see that as a failure and they see that as an extreme negative, and we'll do anything before we cut a program. And I'm not saying that's the first thing you should do. I'm not saying that's, we had a 5% reduction in fundraising this year, so we're just going to wipe out this, you know, I'm not saying that, but it is a really good time in January and February when maybe some of the year end chaos kind of slows down a little bit. Maybe it is a good time to take a look at what you're doing, and is it fit the vision? Does it fit the mission? And, you know, are we doing the best we could do with that? So maybe it's a time to look at that as well.
I think another point, Nathan, that I would throw in there, because I'm moving into that next week as we look at where we are, where we're headed, finances, all those kind of things. And I think one of the things that we can do is to build flexibility into our budgets. So instead of being too rigid, build some flexibility. So maybe a little bit on the lower end as we begin the year, as we see how things are going to shake out, but building a part B, doing it in pencil is helpful. Build some flexibility into your plan and into your budget as you go forward in the new year.
And you and I both do our budgets exactly that way. I mean, we have our base budget that we have to have because, you know, this is our main primary programming and those have to be funded. And so we have that base budget. And then our budgets, neither one of our budgets are written in pen. They are written in pencil and they change. They change up, they change down based on cash flow, based on gifts that come in, windfall gifts. I got notified last week of a gift that was coming in that I had no idea it was coming. Well, that changed my plan for the next 2 months because of that one gift. So you've got to be able to get up or down. You've got to have that flexibility. And a budget is a roadmap. It is not a, you know, we do the budget, the board approves it, and that's it. That's not how you do it. And so you, by having that flexibility in your budget, it does allow you to take into account the ebbs and flows of your revenue, where the economy could impact it. So we are coming up on year end, and there is no question that the negative economic times can impact overall giving. However, not all of your donors are the same. While some donors might be struggling and that might actually impact their year-end giving, others may be thriving. It depends. It is up to you to communicate with your donors, share your story, and ultimately ask for the gift. Will you have some donors give less or maybe not at all? Yeah, probably. But it's still possible for you to hit your fundraising goals for this year.
Well, thanks for listening today. Do you happen to have a particular donor that's on your mind as you've listened to this episode? You know in your heart that this particular donor can give more than they are, but you just don't know what to do. Do you agree with Nathan in his dislike for It's a Wonderful Life and White Christmas? Well, either way, we'd love to hear from you. Our emails are on the show notes. We'd love you to visit with us about your specific situation. We'd be happy to talk to you about it. Well, that's all for today. Until next time.